Morning Glory Milking Farm has taken the literary world by storm, becoming a TikTok sensation and sparking conversations about the evolving romance genre. This unconventional love story between a human woman and a minotaur has garnered a devoted following for its perfect blend of fantasy, humor, and genuine emotion. Even celebrities like Florence Pugh have publicly praised its unique premise, helping propel monster romance into mainstream popularity. What makes this book particularly special is how it uses fantastical elements to explore very real relationship dynamics, creating an experience that's simultaneously escapist and deeply relatable. Violet's life has reached a breaking point. Armed with a master's degree in literature, but drowning in $87,000 of student loan debt, she finds herself staring at a computer screen, watching a training video for what could be her financial salvation. The job at Morning Glory Farm, a pristine facility nestled in the rolling hills outside the city, seems almost too good to be true. $75,000 annual salary, comprehensive medical and dental benefits, 4 weeks paid vacation, and no prior experience required. The catch? She would be milking minotaurs for their semen, which is used in cutting-edge erectile dysfunction medications by pharmaceutical giants. The contrast between Violet's academic background and her potential new role creates a profound sense of cognitive dissonance. As she sits in her cramped studio apartment, pausing and replaying the training video in horrified fascination, we witness her internal struggle between financial necessity and personal dignity. Her tiny living space, with its sagging thrift store couch, flickering fluorescent kitchen light, and cupboards containing only ramen noodles and expired condiments, serves as a physical manifestation of her precarious situation. The stack of past due notices on her desk, including an eviction warning, makes her desperate situation painfully clear. When Violet visits the farm for her interview, she finds herself the only human among a diverse group of non-human applicants, a towering ogre in a business suit, a harpy preening her feathers nervously, and a centaur clicking his hooves against the polished floor. The farm itself presents a jarring juxtaposition. A charming red barn exterior with white trim and weather vane, housing sterile, clinical corridors within. Chrome and steel equipment gleams under harsh fluorescent lighting, and the air carries an antiseptic smell mixed with something distinctly animal. This physical setting brilliantly mirrors Violet's journey from the familiar human world into an unfamiliar monster realm where different rules and norms apply. Despite her initial shock and embarrassment, Violet's mounting bills and dwindling bank account force her hand. Her last paycheck from adjunct teaching barely covered half her rent, and her credit cards are maxed out. With her last $7.83 spent on gas station coffee and day-old bread, she accepts the position, telling herself it's just temporary, 6 months at most, until something better comes along in her field. This decision point represents more than just employment. It's her first step into a world where humans and monsters coexist in ways she never imagined, setting the stage for her unexpected journey into a realm where the boundaries between species, professionalism, and intimacy become increasingly blurred. Violet's first day at Morning Glory Farm is a masterclass in professional discomfort. Her non-human instructor emphasizes the most important rule, keeping the collection floor clinically clean. As Violet dons her sterilized uniform and learns about the elaborate cleaning protocols, the reality of her new position becomes unavoidably concrete. The specialized equipment, an inclined bench with a central hole and enormous suction nozzles, leaves no room for ambiguity about what her job entails. Despite her instructor's insistence that the work is no different from drawing blood and not technically sexual work, Violet's anxiety reaches new heights when she observes her first client, an imposing 2-meter-tall minotaur preparing for the procedure. The clinical language used throughout her training creates a fascinating cognitive dissonance. This is simultaneously an intimate sexual act and a sterile medical procedure. Over her first weeks, Violet immerses herself in the farm's culture, memorizing her training binder and learning the unwritten rules from colleagues. She discovers the taxonomy of clients: clock watchers who treat the process as a quick transaction, pop-and-goes who ejaculate almost immediately, and good little cows who fetishize the milking fantasy. This categorization system reveals how the farm staff mentally manage the unusual nature of their work, creating emotional distance through clinical classification. Violet's first solo collection with an intimidating clock watcher minotaur becomes a pivotal moment. Despite her nervousness, she establishes a rhythm and even elicits physical responses from the typically stoic client. This professional success triggers an unexpected personal reaction. Later at home, she masturbates while remembering the experience, confused by her attraction to the anonymous client. The generous tips she receives, including a perfectly folded $100 bill she suspects came from the clock watcher, further complicate her feelings. Is she being rewarded for efficient work, or is something more personal developing? This section brilliantly explores the blurring boundaries between professional and personal, clinical and intimate. Violet's gradual adaptation to her unusual job mirrors the reader's own journey into accepting this unconventional premise, setting the stage for deeper emotional connections to come. 3 weeks into her job, Violet has fully embraced the farm's mantra of abundant and quick collection, even competing for the monthly bonus awarded to the most productive associate. Her daily commute to Cambrick Creek has become a pleasant routine, allowing her to explore the local market and observe the diverse creatures in this multi-species community. This gradual immersion into monster society marks an important transition. What once seemed alien now becomes familiar and even comfortable. Violet's routine is disrupted when she discovers that a client has specifically requested her services, a rare occurrence that typically results in generous tips. Despite facing a disastrous day of malfunctioning equipment and constant delays, she finally reaches her special client, immediately recognizing him as the clock watcher from her first day, the red-haired minotaur in the striped shirt who had left her so flustered before. The session takes an unexpected turn when the minotaur initiates conversation and asks personal questions, breaking the professional distance typically maintained during collections. Violet notices he's already aroused and realizes he specifically requested her. During the procedure, she struggles against inappropriate thoughts, imagining what intimate involvement with him might be like. The minotaur responds intensely to her touch, finishing with a deep moo that excites her even more. This pivotal interaction marks the transition from purely professional to potentially personal. The $100 tip he leaves behind carries new significance, no longer just compensation for services rendered, but perhaps something more meaningful. Later, alone in her apartment, Violet indulges in fantasies about the minotaur, unable to get him out of her mind. The psychological complexity in this section is remarkable. We witness Violet's internal conflict as professional ethics clash with personal desire. Her fantasies about the minotaur represent more than just sexual attraction. They symbolize her growing comfort with crossing boundaries between human and monster worlds. The author skillfully uses these intimate moments to explore larger themes of acceptance, adaptation, and the human capacity to find connection in unexpected places. As Violet settles into her new routine, she finds herself living in two distinct worlds. During a phone call with her mother, she carefully constructs a sanitized version of her life, omitting the true nature of her employment while emphasizing her improved financial situation. When her mother suggests reconnecting with Carson, a recently divorced ex-boyfriend who's moved back in with his parents, Violet bristles at the implication that she should return to her hometown. This conversation highlights the growing distance between her past life and current reality. The contrast between these worlds becomes even more pronounced when Violet begins exploring Cambrick Creek. She notices the architectural adaptations for different species: doorways sized for trolls, reinforced furniture for heavier creatures, and specialized fixtures for those with unique anatomies. These physical accommodations serve as tangible reminders of the social adjustments she's making as she moves between human and monster spaces. Her friendship with Gilles, a vampire who works extracting blood from human donors at La Vie Rouge restaurant, provides Violet with a crucial bridge between worlds. Their shared experience of working in unconventional intimate services creates an immediate bond. Through Gilles, Violet gains insights into Cambric Creek's diverse community and the complex social dynamics between species. Their conversations about clients with unusual fetishes and difficult coworkers normalize Violet's experiences, helping her feel less isolated in her unusual profession. Meanwhile, Violet's obsession with her favorite Minotaur continues to grow. She begins researching his zodiac sign and astrological compatibility, and even explores different neighborhoods in Cambric Creek, wondering where he might live. These actions reveal her deepening emotional investment and desire to connect beyond the clinical setting of the farm. When she unexpectedly encounters him at the Black Sheep Beanery coffee shop, worlds truly collide. The Minotaur, now in the context of everyday life rather than the controlled environment of the farm, pays for her coffee and attempts conversation. This chance meeting outside their established professional dynamic throws Violet completely off balance, highlighting how unprepared she is for the boundaries between her worlds to dissolve. The Minotaur finally has a name, Rourke, and with this revelation, he transforms from an anonymous client into a potential partner. Their coffee shop encounter creates initial confusion when Violet mistakenly believes he has a partner named Luriel, leading her to retreat from their interaction. This misunderstanding highlights the fragility of their connection and Violet's insecurity about her growing feelings. During their next farm session, the dynamic shifts dramatically when Violet asks about the ring in Rourke's nose. His revelation that he's been divorced for 2 years but kept the ring out of fear of pain removal adds unexpected vulnerability to his character. This personal disclosure marks a significant turning point. They're no longer just technician and client, but two individuals sharing personal histories. When Rourke suggests they might visit the ice rink and vampire restaurant together, he's offering more than casual outings. He's proposing a bridge between their clinical relationship and a potential personal one. These suggested activities would place them firmly in the public sphere as a couple, acknowledging their connection beyond the farm's walls. Their developing relationship prompts Violet to reflect on interspecies dynamics in Cambric Creek. Through conversations with Gilles, she considers how different species might have distinct sexual proclivities and how humans in this community might be there primarily out of sexual curiosity about other species. These reflections raise important questions about fetishization versus genuine connection. Is her attraction to Rourke based on his exotic difference or something deeper? As Violet becomes more comfortable with Rourke, she begins to notice how public spaces are poorly adapted for non-humans, developing a new awareness of her human privilege. This growing consciousness represents an important evolution in her character. She's no longer just a visitor in monster spaces, but an advocate beginning to see the world through a more inclusive lens. The section culminates with Violet's decision to take initiative in advancing their physical relationship, frustrated by Rourke's restraint despite several dates. This moment of agency marks her full embrace of her desires and willingness to pursue what she wants, regardless of societal expectations. Violet's decision to go without underwear during their dinner date represents more than just sexual provocation. It's a declaration of her desire to move beyond the clinical intimacy of the farm to genuine personal connection. When Rourke finally responds by touching her beneath the table while maintaining casual conversation, the power dynamic between them shifts dramatically. His demand that she verbalize her desires forces Violet into a position of vulnerability, admitting her needs explicitly rather than hiding behind professional pretense. After bringing her to orgasm in the restaurant, Rourke accompanies Violet to her apartment, where she attempts to reciprocate. His interruption of her oral advances creates a fascinating moment of tension. Despite their established physical familiarity at the farm, Rourke insists on a different approach to their personal intimacy. His explanation that she isn't ready for his size and needs to be prepared demonstrates both concern for her comfort and a desire to distinguish their personal relationship from their professional interactions. Work's invitation for Violet to spend the weekend at his house represents another threshold crossing, from public dates to private domestic space. This progression follows a traditional relationship development pattern despite their unconventional beginning, suggesting a desire for normalcy within their extraordinary circumstances. At the farm the next day, Violet reflects on her Minotaur clients and their motivations for selling sperm, realizing that for many, it isn't a sexual act, but a financial necessity. This insight creates an important distinction between Rourke and her other clients, reinforcing the uniqueness of their connection. When they finally consummate their relationship at Rourke's home, the scene is rich with mythological references. Rourke compares their situation to Athenian tributes given to the Minotaur to appease his insatiable lust, embracing rather than rejecting the monstrous aspects of his identity. This mythological framing transforms what could be merely physical into something with cultural and historical resonance. The aftermath of their lovemaking, Rourke's gentle concern about hurting her and suggestion of ice cream creates a tender contrast to the intensity of their physical connection. Violet's realization that she might be half in love with him while preparing to clean up their sticky mess beautifully captures the blend of the sublime and mundane that characterizes genuine intimacy. Waking beside Rourke on a sunny Saturday morning, Violet reflects on how her life has transformed. Once driven by academic responsibilities, she now appreciates lazy mornings with her partner after nights of passion followed by enormous desserts. This shift in priorities represents her evolving values, from career-focused independence to relationship-centered contentment. Their explorations of Cambric Creek together reveal the depth of their cultural integration, visiting the florist run by three identical sisters with green beetle bodies, the occultist tea room where Rourke's broad shoulders and horns seemed comically out of place, and the salon specializing in puppy cuts for Worgen and Knoll children. These experiences highlight both the charms and challenges of their interspecies relationship as they navigate spaces designed for different bodies and cultural expectations. Violet notices the contrast between how welcome she feels in Cambric Creek despite being human versus the strange looks they receive in Bridgerton for their interspecies relationship. This observation touches on important themes of acceptance, prejudice, and community belonging. Her growing fear of Sundays when she must return to her empty apartment in the city demonstrates her emotional investment in not just Rourke, but the entire community he represents. When Violet initiates morning intimacy with Rourke, she reflects on how it's a waste that he sells his semen to the farm when she so appreciates feeling it herself. This thought reveals her possessiveness and desire for exclusivity, wanting to claim what was once a commodity shared in a commercial context. The introduction of neighbors Luriel and Kosh provides a glimpse of community support for their relationship. Luriel's enthusiastic interest in Violet's job interview shows how Rourke's social circle is embracing her presence. The job opportunity at the Slade Foundation, researching historic building fabrics and paint colors with an office in an old caretaker's house near downtown, represents the perfect synthesis of Violet's academic background and her new life in Cambric Creek. Violet's decision to maintain two weekly shifts at the farm, partly for extra income, but also because she doesn't want another technician handling her bull, demonstrates her evolving relationship with her unusual job. What began as financial desperation has transformed into something she values as part of her identity and relationship. Through her friendship with Luriel and her connection Dinah, Violet discovers the perfect job opportunity at the Slade Foundation in Cambric Creek. This research position, recreating historic building fabrics and paint colors, represents the ideal blend of her academic background and her new life. The comparable salary and flexibility would allow her to maintain some shifts at the farm, keeping one foot in both worlds. Violet's reflection that her situation seems like something out of a romantic movie, except I already have my perfect partner, captures the fairy tale quality of her journey. From desperate, debt-ridden graduate to fulfilled professional with a loving partner, her transformation feels complete yet authentic because of the unconventional path she took to get there. Her conversations with L'Oreal about interspecies relationships reveal the challenges that still lie ahead, from minor cultural conflicts to painful comments from strangers. These discussions demonstrate Violet's growing awareness of the complexities of her choice, moving beyond infatuation to realistic consideration of their future together. Her concern about bringing Rourke to meet her family in an entirely human neighborhood shows her protective instinct and recognition of the prejudice they might face. On her last day at the farm, Violet attends to several bulls, including one requiring specific stimulation to reach climax. This final professional experience serves as a reminder of how far she's come, from horrified novice to confident expert. When she confirms to Rourke that she got the job, his suggestion that she not unpack everything in her new apartment hints at their potential future living together, accelerating their relationship timeline. Violet's reflection on how Morning Glory Farm changed her life creates a beautiful narrative circle. What began as an embarrassing necessity became the catalyst for finding love, community, and professional fulfillment. Her realization that she loves Rourke completely and that their relationship is worth fighting for despite their differences offers a powerful conclusion to her journey. The epilogue showing Rourke's perspective as a first-time visitor to Morning Glory provides a clever reversal, allowing readers to experience the farm through new eyes. His initial offense at the farm theme and health screening requirements, followed by his excitement at the prospect of manual massage during collection, reveals the complex emotions surrounding the farm's services from the client perspective. C.M. Nascosta's Morning Glory Milking Farm has fundamentally redefined boundaries in romantic fiction, masterfully blending explicit content with genuine emotional depth in ways previously unexplored. The author's rich background in horror and fantasy literature reveals her long-standing preference for fantastical creatures over conventional protagonists and the macabre over mundane, a perspective that directly shaped this groundbreaking work's unique vision. Her detailed world-building demonstrates an intimate understanding of both monster mythology and contemporary romance conventions. The novel's remarkable success has established Cambric Creek as a vibrant setting for multiple interconnected stories, creating a rich tapestry of supernatural romance. Subsequent works like A Blue Ribbon Romance, The Mabon Festival, Sweet Berries, Run Rabbit Run, Moon-Blooded Breeding Clinic, and Two for Tea have expanded this unique fictional universe, each adding layers of complexity to the world's social dynamics and cultural norms. These stories explore different aspects of interspecies relationships, from casual encounters to long-term commitments, showcasing how monster romance can create not just individual love stories, but entire communities where different species interact in complex and meaningful ways. The interconnected nature of these tales builds a deeper understanding of how various supernatural beings navigate love, work, and daily life alongside humans. What elevates Morning Glory Milking Farm to particular significance is its sophisticated use of fantastical elements to explore deeply human themes. The story tackles financial desperation through Violet's initial motivation to take the job, professional ethics in the clinical setting of the facility, and cultural differences in relationships between humans and minotaurs. By placing these familiar challenges in an unfamiliar context, Nascosta creates both emotional distance and surprising intimacy, allowing readers to examine their own assumptions about relationships, consent, and meaningful work without the baggage of conventional romance tropes. The clinical nature of the facility serves as both literal setting and metaphor for how intimacy can develop even in the most structured and formal circumstances. The book's widespread popularity signals a broader cultural shift toward more inclusive and imaginative romantic fiction. It demonstrates how happy endings aren't limited to conventional couples or traditional relationship structures, challenging readers to expand their definition of love and compatibility. In Violet and Rourke's journey from clinical transaction to genuine emotional connection, readers find a surprisingly relatable story about overcoming societal prejudices, navigating workplace romance boundaries, and finding home in unexpected places. The author's careful attention to consent, communication, and character development elevates the work beyond its provocative premise to create a thoughtful exploration of how love transcends physical differences and societal expectations. This pioneering work has inspired numerous authors to explore similar themes and settings, establishing monster romance as a legitimate subgenre that can tackle serious themes while maintaining its fantastical elements. The success of Morning Glory Milking Farm demonstrates how speculative fiction can create space for discussions about diversity, acceptance, and the nature of love itself.